It was getting darker over the enormous expanse of the lake. Twilight is a much different experience when you're far away from the lights of a city or town. Modern civilization bathes us in light throughout the hours of darkness. Lighted billboards, streetlights, headlights, airplane lights, neon decorations, the interior lights of homes and businesses, floodlights that strobe across the sky. They're so much a part of our life that the darkness of night is barely a factor in our daily thinking anymore. We mock one another's lack of courage with accusations of being afraid of the dark, all the while industriously making our own lights brighter, more energy efficient, cheaper, and longer lasting. There's power in the night. There's terror in the darkness. Despite all our accumulated history, learning, and experience, we remember. We remember times when we were too small to reach the light switch on the wall, and when the darkness itself was enough to make us cry out in fear. Get a good ways out from civilization, say miles and miles away on a lightless lake, and the darkness is there, waiting. Twilight means more than just time to call the children in from playing outside. Fading light means more than just the end of another day. Night is when terrible things emerge from their sleep and seek soft flesh and hot blood. Night is when unseen beings with no regard for what our people have built and no place in what we have deemed the natural order look in at our world from outside and think dark and alien thoughts. And sometimes, just sometimes, they do things. I walked down the ancient hillsides of Demon Reach and felt acutely aware of that fact. Night wasn't falling so much as sharpening its claws. I walked out to the end of the floating dock alone. Billy and Georgia remained behind in the woods. You would not believe how sneaky a wolf is capable of being until you've seen one in action. Wolves, acting with human-level intelligence, and exceptional human intelligence at that, are all but invisible when they choose to be. A boat was rounding the buoy that marked the opening in the reef. It was a white rental boat, like any number available to tourists in the area, a craft about 20 feet long and rigged for water skiing. The wind had risen, coming in from the southwest, and the lake was getting choppier. The rental boat was wallowing a little and bouncing irregularly against the waves, throwing up small shocks of spray. I watched it come over the last few hundred yards until I could see who was on board. The boat was fairly new. Its engine made an odd clattering noise which served to identify the occupants. The White Council, it seemed, had arrived on time. Ebenezer McCoy was at the wheel of the boat, his bald head shiny in the rain. Listens to Wind sat in the passenger seat, wearing a rain poncho, one hand gripping the side of the boat, the other holding on to the dashboard in front of him. His weather-seamed face was grim. In the center of the rear bench was a tiny figure in white silk, embroidered with red flowers. Ancient Mai was Chinese and looked as delicate and frail as an eggshell teacup. Her hair was pure white and long, held up with a number of jade combs. Though she was now old, even by the standards of the White Council, she was still possessed of a sizable portion of what would have been a haunting, ethereal beauty in her youth. Her expression was serene, her dark eyes piercing and merciless. She frightened me. Veteran wardens sat on either side of Ancient Mai, dour in their gray cloaks, and three more were sitting or crouching elsewhere in the boat, all of them from the hard-bitten squad that had been on standby back in Edinburgh. They were all armed to the teeth, and their expressions meant business. Apparently, Mai scared them at least as much as she did me. One of them was holding an umbrella for her. I waited at the end of the dock, inviting Ebenezer by gesture to pull up on the side opposite the water beetle. He brought the boat in with considerably more skill than I had shown, killed the ailing engine while it was still moving, and got up to toss me a line. I caught it and secured the boat to the dock without taking my eyes off of anyone in the boat. No one spoke. Once the engine had fallen silent, the only sound was rain and wind. "Evening," I ventured, nodding to Ebenezer. He was staring hard at me, frowning. I saw his eyes scan the shoreline and come back to me. "Hoss," he said. He rose and stepped out onto the dock. One of the wardens tossed him another line, and he secured the back end of the craft. Then he got off, walked up to me, and offered me his hand. I shook it.